This is Jim Giles, and you're listening to Radio Free Mississippi. And joining us on the telephone line now is Mr. Alex Linder, who runs VNN, Vanguard News Network, and the forum associated with it. Mr. Linder is a writer and a speaker who comes from an intellectually conservative background, and he is a white nationalist. Mr. Linder, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, good to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Can you just tell us about your background and what led you to where you're at today?
Okay, what led me to where I'm at today was writing editorials in college out of Pomona, California, back in 84 to 88. I encountered a lot of hostility. At that time, I wasn't an open racialist, wasn't a white nationalist. Of course, that was kind of the last generation before the Internet arose. After graduation, I went out and worked at the American Spectator, which is kind of a neocon magazine, in 89, and I also worked for Evans & Novak briefly, and then I went into trade publishing for about 10 years. And after that, my interest in politics was just greater than anything else. I started GoVNN.com, Vanguard News Network, daily news and commentary from a white perspective, pushing white racial consciousness. We also have a forum right now, VNNforum.com, and we discuss matters of interest to white people and try to grow that racial consciousness. And what the rise of the Internet allowed was it allowed people to talk horizontally. They don't have to merely sit there and listen to the Jews through the big amplifier. They can talk to whites about what's actually going on, and that allows them to escape the filter.
There's a lot. Boy, we got a lot to talk about here. Evans and Novak. Novak was diagnosed with cancer recently, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
How long were you with those guys?
Oh, I was with them for a few months. What it was, what they have in D.C. is kind of a right-wing journalist training center called National Journalism Center, and they put their interns out at a bunch of different places around that area, and I worked with Evans and Novak. And at that point, Evans subsequently died. He was kind of a patrician WASP from Philadelphia, I believe. Novak is a Jew originally from the Middle West. He's been out in D.C. a long time, and they put out different newsletters in addition to writing a syndicated column. And they worked out of the, can't remember the name of the building, but it's right across the street from the old executive building in the White House, so that's the heart of the heart there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they deal with superficial stuff, and they call him the Prince of Evil, but he's still basically an insider, and he knows all those people, and he wouldn't disagree on any of the racial stuff. So, to me, that kind of political reporting is pretty superficial. It ultimately doesn't matter. No matter who's in the White House, we have thousands of Mexicans invading the country each night. So, that deeper stuff is what I'm concerned about. Novak also, by the way, he converted to Catholicism, so he's still ultimately a Jew because it's a racial thing and you can't escape it, but that at least shows you something where his heart lies, because the Jews generally dislike Catholics intensely.
You lost me there. What is that, but as far as where his heart lies? I mean, Jews hate Catholics.
Well, I mean, very, very few Jews are going to convert to Catholicism unless they're somewhat different from most of their fellows, but ultimately Jew is a racial identification. If not a full race, it's at least set aside genetically.
And what does that tell us about Novak by him converting to Catholicism? What does that say?
Ultimately, I don't know. It just tells you he's different from a lot of Jews.
I see.
But I would still, as a white nationalist, judge him as a Jew.
Yeah.
But again, when I worked for them, I wasn't a white nationalist. I was a conservative, and I was an individualist, and I didn't purely think in those terms, but it was upon seeing that the exact same standards prevailed within right-wing Washington as prevailed in left-wing Pomona, where I went to college, I came to realize that there's basically a group of people that's controlling everything, and they're essentially Jews. Not all of them are Jews, but Jews are the ones setting the intellectual agenda, and they're the one that make everybody who appears on public TV into a liberal, because they can't go across them on race. So you'll never hear anybody on TV or in the mass paper saying that, look, the races need to be separated, because essentially the people running the country are allowing the black.
Okay. All right, we left off. We were talking, and I wanted to make the point. You were talking about how you became a white nationalist. Now, do you think that the only way whites will regain control of their government is through a financial collapse?
Oh, I wouldn't even venture to predict how things might evolve. That's certainly one way in which you might get the mass of people who now have full bellies and are happy watching TV to consider something truly alternative to the system. But as long as the system is providing them with some kind of income and food, you're not going to get a real revolution, I doubt.
Mm-hmm. What's your take on the economy? Do you think that's in the offing here? Possibility, strong possibility, likelihood, not likely?
I think they'll continue to print money and they'll continue to manipulate people, and it'll go up and down, crash, boom, bust, what have you. Mm-hmm. It's real hard to say.
Yeah.
But you saw the bailout. They're not bailing out average people. Average people are paying the bailout for these banker billionaires, most of whom are Jews. So this country is being run completely for the advantage of the Jews and against the advantage of the posterity that the Constitution was aimed to protect. But, of course, none of this is spoken about in the papers.
Yeah, of course not. I think that the sending that NAFTA and GATT, the fact that the middle class is disappearing is not going to allow them to prop things up forever, and that a genuine we're in the process of a genuine slow collapse now that they can't stop.
And that's what I see from where I am in the heartland, is they've gotten rid of the middle class manufacturing base. And, you know, this is nothing that hundreds of people haven't observed, but it seems to be going on. Either you're a professional lawyer or a doctor, or you're, you know, $5 an hour service worker. And the stuff in between is disappearing. And they're also importing non-whites into the country at record rates. They're kind of importing the Asians to replace the white upper middle class, and they're importing the Mexicans to replace the white working class. And it's creating really a mess of a society. And I don't think there's any basis for opposing this other than a racial basis. A lot of people think some kind of politics or some kind of religious basis can oppose it, but I really don't think either of those will work. It's got to be a racial opposition, and it's probably going to entail some violence and also worsening economic circumstances.
Well,
people aren't willing. There's a great quote from Solzhenitsyn, basically, unless you're willing to kill and die to defend yourself, there's only temporizing and kind of going backwards and remonstrating, which is all the conservatives ever do.
There's a whole heck of a lot of violence out there right now in the crime area.
And it's, directed against us, though.
Right. All right, let's go to the kids in Knoxville, because I want you, you're an eloquent voice on this. You know probably more about it than anybody in the country. Just tell us about the kids in Knoxville.
Well, Shannon Christian and Chris Newsom were a good-looking young white couple, and basically they were set upon by blacks who, over the course of a weekend, raped, tortured, and murdered both of them. And we held a rally to protest it. And I mean, these, I don't know if you have people say nigger in your show, but these were just the vilest type of niggers. And what's the big point here is that this stuff, while this may have been a particularly horrific crime, is common. The niggers involved in this, except for maybe one of the four or five who were involved, all had very long records. You know, multiple felonies, years in prison, and we just put them in and then we let them out. And essentially, what you saw in the triumph of Barack Obama is this national narrative, this narrative that the progressives, the Jews, the left use to explain American history. And we're supposed to say, oh, this is a wonderful historic election, how lucky we are to be part of it. But it's not a good thing, and it can only be portrayed as a good thing by covering up crimes like that, which happened to Shannon Christian and Chris Newsom. Out in Knoxville.
When you say over the weekend, what do you mean there?
I'm sorry?
When you say over the weekend, they raped and killed them over the weekend.
Over 2-3 days it happened. They were out on a date and they got carjacked, and the media played it up. Oh, it's just carjacked, and they wanted a car. Well, they abandoned the car after 3-4 hours. And they took him to this little house. I've been there and taken a picture of it. Now the house is being destroyed. But it's just a little house a little ways off the freeway there in Knoxville. And they raped and murdered them. I mean, they did all manner of really, really violent, nasty stuff to them. So much so that the police even cover up as much of it as they possibly could. These kids are both very good-looking, perfect poster children for this undeclared war that's going on against whites by blacks, facilitated by Jews. And by facilitated, I mean they cover up what these blacks are doing to whites in the media, and they pass the laws that give them access to our daughters, our mothers, and our sisters. And our sons, too. They rape the male involved in this.
That's come out as a matter of public record?
It's come out various different ways. I mean, there's underground stuff. There have been claims made. Not all the claims made about what happened are true, but yeah, they definitely raped, tortured, and murdered them. That can be said with absolutely no doubt.
They definitely raped the boy as well?
Oh yeah, they raped him. Yeah. But I mean, as far as official releases, no, they play this down. And that's part of what we were rallying against, is they don't want the public to know the details of any of this stuff.
No, they bury it. Most people in Mississippi, most people in the country wouldn't even know who those two kids are.
They wouldn't. And this is the thing, you know, the leftist theory about the media is that it's driven by corporations seeking to make profits. And you go, okay, well, look at what they cover. They love crime stuff. Why hasn't this been talked about? Well, it hasn't been talked about because their political agenda outweighs their profit-seeking. And their political agenda is telling everybody to believe that the races can get along and everything is perfectly fine. And to pull that off, they have to cover stuff like this up.
Okay.
They have to see that it doesn't make it outside of about 50 miles around Knoxville. That's why none of your listeners probably have heard of it, except they probably are more into true politics, so they probably have heard of it. But the wider body of people hasn't heard of it.
Okay, for the federal agents who will no doubt listen to this interview at some point in the future, if they're not listening to it right now, tell us one more time what what was done to the two white kids. I want to hear it one more time, just very slowly. And
I don't fully know what was done to them, but what I can say in specific terms is they were raped, tortured, and murdered, and not in 1 or 2 hours, but over the course of a weekend. And it ended up, you know, being cut up and having chemicals dumped in their mouth. I mean, Shannon Christian was raped vaginally, anally, and orally, and essentially cut up and left to die in a garbage bag. And they poured being niggers, they have no brain, so they poured chemicals in her mouth to try to remove the traces of their DNA and chopped her up to some extent, or at least mutilated her, and threw her into a bunch of garbage bags and put her in a garbage can, apparently.
You know what I bet her parents were probably saying is our Heavenly Father. What do you think about that? Probably Bible-thumping Baptist.
Yeah, baptism is a big deal out there. I visited her grave, and, you know, just a random chance the day I went there, a couple of her friends were there, and, you know, they're good people, but they're led by their pastors and by all authority. Right. Government, press, and bought off pastors. They're taught to believe that this, you can't look at this in a wider context. You can't look at the underlying facts here. It's just a matter of hate, and, you know, this happened for no particular reason. Everything is done to prevent people from thinking about this is something that happened that could have been prevented. And it could have been prevented if the Jew communists hadn't taken over in the 60s and passed the laws outlawing segregation that protected our people from blacks. There wasn't a lot of interracial rape and interracial murder before 1965, before the mid-60s when they passed all the laws facilitating this kind of vicious crime. The Jews know all this, and they deliberately keep it out of the media, and they present it as a wonderful thing. Oh, great, Obama's elected. Well, let me tell you, there'll be lots more of this kind of crime. We've already seen small examples of it. Where they're like, you can't do anything to me now. We got a black president slapping cops, acting up. Believe me, they feel empowered by having Obama as president. And they think it means open season on whites. They can do whatever they want to us, plus we have to pay for it. Until whites organize around a racial basis, nothing will change. It will keep getting worse. And they'll keep covering crimes like this up.
I agree.
They claim, according to government statistics, there's about 40,000 black-on-white rapes a year. And virtually zero white-on-black rapes each year. Now, before the Jews passed all those laws in the 60s, giving the blacks access to our community, there was virtually no interracial rape. So tell me civil rights is a good thing. I say it's a bad thing.
Well,
bad for whites, and what's good for whites is all that matters.
You know, the biggest force for evil in Mississippi, and I would say in the Deep South, is religion. That is absolutely the biggest force for evil. And in preparing for this interview, I was doing a little Googling on you, and you know, I came across. I'm pretty sure it was attributed in referring to you that you were influenced a lot by a gentleman by the name of Dr. Revilo Oliver.
Revilo Oliver, yeah.
Revilo Oliver. And I looked him up, and, you know, I'm not an academician or an intellectual, but, you know, I like what you guys say, and it's really interesting, to be around smart guys. But this Oliver fella, I was reading something about him, and it says Oliver believed that religion was one of the major weaknesses of his nation and civilization. He characterized Christianity as, quote, a spiritual syphilis, close quote, which, quote, has rotted the minds of our race and induced paralysis of our will to live, close quote. That's pretty stinking good in my book.
Yeah.
I'm surrounded by Jesus lovers, and when I say Jesus lovers, I spell it G-E-E-Z-U-S.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. We got plenty of it up here in Missouri.
Yeah, the thing about Oliver, though, which you know a lot of these Jesus lovers would point to, they would say, "Well, the guy killed himself. I mean, how happy could he have been? Why'd he do that?"
I mean, he lived to be a very old man, and I'm sure he killed himself because of his declining physical abilities, because I know that he wrote the same wonderful stuff into the early Clinton administration. Well, at that point, he was already in his 80s or 90s. So I don't think there's anything to be made of on that front.
Yeah, he was in physical pain.
I think he was basically degenerating. I'm not an expert on Revilo Oliver, but he's basically like a Mencken, a just brilliant. Brilliant, not only extremely learned, erudite, he was very witty, and you don't often find that. And he was a former classics professor at University of Illinois, I believe it was, head of their classics department. Extremely learned man, and a real, real talent. But, I don't think there's anything that can really be made of his committing suicide.
I got you. Okay, so as far as intellectuals in the white nationalist movement, how many are there, would you guess?
Well, it depends what you want to mean. I mean, I'm someone who, I would just put it on the professional level. I'm not a academic myself. I'm just a writer. I have a background in, professional writing. There are intellectuals who have provided material that is used by white nationalists. I saw that you have had Dr. Kevin MacDonald on your show, for example. I don't know if he would call himself a white nationalist, but he's certainly someone who has done legitimate PhD level work on Jews, explaining what they are and proving that they present a threat to our race as a whole. And we have certainly taken his material and put what I try to do is popularize it or put flesh on it and show you the emotional meaning of it. And he, you know, as an academic, you have to write in somewhat dry terms and you have to document everything that you say. But the flip side of that is what the Jews have done is allow atrocities like that committed against Newsom and Christian to occur. And it's up to those of us in a lower level to popularize that and build up resentment against it, and as well as an understanding of the legal and media context in which this kind of crime can occur.
While I'm thinking about the crime issue, I want to hit on two other crimes that people might listen to this interview, and I'm sure a lot of people will over time. What about the Kansas massacre?
Oh, okay, what was that, Wichita?
Yeah, Wichita.
Wichita. That was a few years ago. What happened there was basically these blacks, they invaded a townhouse with a bunch of white kids in it, and they ended up torturing them and getting them to pull their money out, and that night ended with them going out to a snowy field, having the kids lie down, and then shooting them all in the head. And the only reason we know what happened is that I think there were five of them. Four of them died from the shots in the head. The fifth one, the bullet ricocheted off the girl's beret, and she walked like a mile and a half naked and came out of it alive somehow and was able to tell the tale of this just night of horrific murdering by these two niggers. And again, these were blacks who'd grown up around whites and who had no particular hostility to whites, and this was still how they acted. This was a case that was hushed up.
Now, when you say the girl was naked, that means they raped her.
Yeah, they did all kinds of obscene things. They forced like the males to fillet each other, and they forced all these different people to have sex, and they had sex with them. It was a total mess. And between them, they only had one gun, and there were like four or five people involved in this. And a lot of people said, geez, that just shows you how pacified white males have become.
Well, it's true, too. It's absolutely true. There are a lot of effeminate white males out there. Which raises the issue, if whites can ever regain control of their government and start, you know, being the ones who write the laws again, don't you think that there ought to be, and once that happens, once white nationalists regain control of the government and are in control again, are the legal authority, and impose separation, don't you think that the separation should not end simply by putting whites and blacks here, that the whites who like, you know, in other words, don't force separation on whites who don't like it? I think that's our problem right now. We've got, you know, you see the problem as Jews. I see it as whites not lacking the motivation to do what's right. What about that?
Well, yeah, but what's the cause and what's the effect? Though I would say originally, the problem is that whites have more intelligence and creativity than other races, and 90% of that's good, but there's also the flip side. That stuff can be perverted, and it's grown perverted into the doctrine of liberalism, which is essentially a cultic view of the world, and they can't lay out their case rationally, so what they have to do is suppress everything. So they work, that perverse spirit within whites can be manipulated by outside races who see where we're vulnerable. And what happened was...
I'm going to stop it right here. I'm going to start recording. This is Jim Giles, and you're listening to Radio Free Mississippi. And on the phone with us is Mr. Alex Linder with Vanguard News Network, VNN Forum. Okay, Alex, sorry for all this. You were saying about the thing about the Jews is what now?
Well, Jews got into this country, and they bought up the media, they took over the academia, and they spread their bogus doctrines. And they've been doing it so long that it wasn't until the Internet where we have been able to build kind of a counterforce to their continual pressure on every front.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
I was hearing some clicking. I wasn't sure if it was a recording.
Yeah. We probably got a lot of people, well, at least more than usual. Okay. There's a lot out there. Let me see if I can hit on some of them. What, Bill White, he's been indicted. What about that?
Well, it looks to me like they're trying to railroad him the way they railroaded Matt Hale. I've read the criminal complaint, the PDF of it that's put out, that the FBI submitted to the court to get, you know, the warrant to search his house and to arrest him. And they're taking general legal, rhetorical bits of rhetoric that he might have said, and they're combining that with the fact that I guess he called up the queer Jew who was the foreman on the Matt Hale jury, and then he called him and I guess ascertained his name. I think he stipulated to that, and then after that, supposedly this guy received 50 text messages, but the ones that they quote in the complaint don't really say anything. They're not threatening. So they're trying to get him for soliciting violence against this person who served in the jury, you know, 5 years ago or whatever it was when Hale was convicted. So,
but,
of course, they say that they don't reveal all the information they have, but nothing they've revealed so far shows any crime was committed.
But, boy, is that is stupid, calling up a juror, man. You don't met, and the, you know, to my mind, anybody who messes with a judge or a juror, man, they really asking for what they get.
Well, again, this case is already resolved 5 years ago.
Yeah, but
so I'm not sure how they can portray it as intimidating a juror when, you know, it's Hale's in prison, the case is over with. But I would agree that there's absolutely no upside to doing it.
Yeah, that is boy. And I mean, it shows that brings up the notion of all this kind of aberrant behavior by those who are vocally white. They don't seem to be normal. And I know a lot of what I've said, and people don't have a high view of me, I know, from my previous campaigns, but still, I contend I'm a little, a lot more normal than a lot of that stuff that's out there. And
it's a difficult context to operate in, because whites who try to organize on the basis of defending their own people are denied the same legal rights that other groups receive, as a matter of course. And the Jews are so able to enact penalties against anyone who tries to defend our race that it tends to leave the field to people who either aren't qualified or are crazy or have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And this is a very, very serious problem that we face. Anybody who has qualifications and money or something at stake tends to be bought off into safe, ineffectual conservatism. And that's why some of the biggest enemies that we face are the conservatives, who appear to offer an alternative to the system, but in effect are its biggest support.
Well, that brings
if you understand up, what I mean.
I do. But I haven't read all that's on your forum about Ron Paul, but I know there was a big, a lot of white nationalists were supporting Ron Paul. I wasn't one of them. I never thought that, him quitting the race the way he did, that stunk to high heaven to me. I mean, what do you?
Yeah, and well, it's also that, they were blaming Bill White for undermining his campaign, but all Bill White did was point to various quotes in Paul's newsletter, and Paul himself ran from his own words. He tried to pretend that he didn't know that he didn't write the words. Well, okay, it went out in a newsletter under his name. Either he wrote it or Lou Rockwell, one of his libertarian buddies, wrote it. And B, there was nothing indefensible. The words were entirely correct, yet Paul ran away from them. So he just showed himself to be another coward, and there's no point to it. So the people who blame Bill White or the white nationalists for undermining Ron Paul's campaign are ridiculous. You don't run from words put out under your own name, especially not when they're accurate. That was where he could have made the real progress. But, of course, being a libertarian, they're not ever going to get anywhere. That's another thing set up to sidetrack whites. You can only have individual liberty in a white context. It's not an individual thing. You're only free to develop your full potential in a safe situation with other people who are basically like you. You're not going to develop your individualism among a hearty mix of blacks and Mexicans and Jews. You're going to be living out of fear of your own life.
Mm-hmm. I thought Paul got way more credit than he deserved. And that's just... What about Pat Buchanan?
He's a Catholic. He ultimately puts the individual soul. He's willing to sacrifice the white race in exchange for the soul of the individual black. And that's the Catholic Church's position. They allow race to be acknowledged to an extent, but in reality, they underplay the value of race. And they've also been infiltrated themselves by Jews over the centuries, and it really took full flower in Vatican II. And they've become just another liberal institution in large measure, and their universalist aspect of it is what's the problem. They say, we can't treat blacks as a group. We have to treat them as individuals with serious souls. The doctrine of equality, even if it's only moral or spiritual equality, will undermine any white society. And it'll get them focused on thinking about others and worrying about the little nigglets in Africa rather than worrying about their own race. We can't save the blacks. They are as God made them, to make an ironic turn on it. And why, if God created the world and he created these different kinds of people, why is it morally wrong to look specifically at what he created and how it differs, how the different parts of it are different? And we see that blacks are not on the same level as whites. They don't mix with them. They fall into a group that's irreconcilable in its interests and its desires with our group. And we have to put what's good for whites ahead of this doctrine of spiritual equality. Buchanan won't do that. He'll walk around the edges. Ultimately, though, he's a Catholic liberal like the rest of them.
He really comes out with some good articles, though, doesn't he?
He's the best mainstream columnist in terms of knowing history and actually having something worth saying. But you still have to have that extra bit to turn what he says into something useful.
Did you see the movie Gandhi?
Yeah, I've seen that.
You remember that part where the white British fellow wanted to join Gandhi when they were going off, and then Gandhi said, no, we got to do this ourselves?
No, I don't remember that.
Well, he was making a big racial statement, in my view, when he did that. In other words, I remember Robert Friends. I communicated with him a lot right before his death, and one thing he said, what's the point if you're not going to be pro-white and anti-Zionist? And, you know, the thing I admire about you is, I mean, you're 100%. Even though I'm very sympathetic, I can see it's a hard thing to do, because what about the Republican Party? This thing about Palin may run for the U.S. Senate. What do you make of Sarah Palin?
Well, she's pretty typical in American in a lot of regards. She's anti-intellectual. She's a rapture bunny, as I call it. There's a lot of good individually. She has a lot of kids, and she's not a bad person, but she's certainly not... She's not someone you'd really want representing you, ideally. I mean, politics is supposed to be for older men. It's supposed to be for older men who've proven themselves successful and stable through their lives. That's who needs to be voting and running things.
Mm-hmm.
Older white men, obviously. Not essentially silly women like she is.
Yeah. I like it. Oh, yeah, that your bluntness makes me think of a book that you've talked about, something about manners, how that changed your view of things a lot. What is that book?
Oh, The Ordeal of Civility by John Murray Cudahy. And it's written at an extremely high level. It's basically written at a graduate school level. And one of few books I've ever read where I had to look up a number of words to find out what they meant. But what he does, and he's now dead, and he did this, he wrote this book back in the 70s, what he shows is the ethnic animus driving Freud, Marx, and these other scholars. So they present their case in the name of universal humanity, but actually what's driving them is a specific Jewish hatred of white people. And what they would try to do is, back at that time, there was still a degree of freedom, and whites could speak publicly about things they didn't like about Jews. And what Marx and Freud would do is say, oh, that's not Jews that you don't like. That's merely a symptom of a certain class under capitalism, Marx would say. And if things change, that will disappear. Or Freud would say, no, what you don't like is just it's sexual repression. That's the problem. And once you get rid of sexual repression, then those things that you think you don't like about Jews will disappear. And that's part of the reason is they developed those ideas through other people developed them through the Frankfurt School. And maybe some of your listeners have heard of the authoritarian personality. What they've done is basically demonize basic white mentality and basic white patterns and say there's something wrong with us. They're always promoting the loose sex because they believe that sexual promiscuity reduces anti-Semitism. So that explains everything that you see on TV. It's all intended to promote this pro-homosexual, pro-abortion, sexually loose, tolerant, diverse society because it's good for Jews. It may be bad for us individually. It may wreck our families, prevent families from even being formed or rip them apart and destroy our communities, but it's good for Jews.
Because they don't practice what they preach.
No, almost everything they advise for us, they are against themselves. Just look at Israel. They love gun control over here in the U.S. for us. They don't want white men owning a gun. They don't want white men speaking freely. Over in Israel, they've got teenagers running around with fully automatic weapons. But they don't want you or me owning a gun because we might actually use it to defend ourselves against their dictatorship.
Before I became racially conscious and began my pro-white campaigns, there were a couple of experiences that I can reflect back on that I didn't understand what was happening at the time. But when you say that Jews hate white people, I personally can attest to that because I was living in Atlanta at the time in apartments. They were called post apartments, kind of a, you know, nice apartments. And there was maybe some kind of get together, kind of a yuppie party. And there were young, you know, young kids over there. And there were a couple of obvious Jews from like New Jersey that were down. And the expression, one of them, maybe had had too much to drink and he was not concealing his genuine emotion toward me. But, I mean, he didn't know me from Adam, but I was clearly a big, strapping Southern man. And there was an expression and an attitude toward me that just crystallized what you said about Jews hating white people. And then there's another occasion when I was working for IBM on Madison Avenue in New York. I had a contemporary Jewish fella who was constantly ribbing me and reflecting back on his animus toward me. That's what it was. I mean, he was basically, you know, that's what it was all about. I was, I didn't know what the heck, you know, why he, you know.
No, you wouldn't know because you're white and we don't inherently think in those terms. But that's exactly what it is. They see you and your type as dirty, stupid, uncouth, rednecks, shigets is their term. It's kind of the counterpart to shiksa. Shiksa means unclean whore. You'll see them talk about that in their media. Shigets is the male equivalent. You know, you're just a rude boy. And I've gone to school with these people and even lived in the same house as them. I know how they think. They see basically all of us whites are very dangerous. We need to be totally controlled by the government lest anti-Semitism and Nazism break out. And they basically see us as dumb, crude, boorish animals. And that's taught by their rabbis. Yep. They are gods, and we are there only to serve them, and we can be raped, murdered, discarded at their convenience.
And our holy people, I'm sorry.
I mean, does that sound like a religion to you? That's what they teach their people. That's their doctrine. And it's absolutely reflected, not just in your dealings with them individually, but that's what you see over TV. That's why they're always making fun of the South on TV. And you can say anything you want about whites, rednecks, Germans, Southerners, priests, preachers, but you can't ever mock the Jew or the black or the Mexican. They're heroic, noble creatures because the Jew is using them to destroy our country. But it's always open season on Southerners. Everybody knows that.
Yep.
But why is that? Well, this is the explanation of it. If you want to go back and dig through their intellectuals and dig through their culture and find out why they act the way they do, they hate us.
Yep. I would agree in whole. I would be interested to get your take on a few individuals within the Jewish community who appear to me to be good-hearted, and Israel Shamir comes to my mind. How do you react to a good Jew?
Well, there are some Jews who either they convert to Christianity or they come to recognize that their tribal doctrines are bad. Yeah, what can you say? They're outliers. They're very unusual. And I'd say take what they write and use it to the extent we can.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't make any, their policy towards us is, you know, we're bad, and that's basically, you have to bring a gun to that gunfight. I say there aren't any good Jews. That doesn't mean that there aren't some who reject it or even leave it and who give us useful information, and I'm all for using that, but my attitude is pure black and white on that.
Yep.
But, yeah, I mean, I read those people, and I respect what they have to say.
There was something I was going to – I just wanted the thing that gets me here in the South is everybody's so nice. They want to be nice, and they're so gullible. They don't think in these terms. I mean, they would take hook, line, and sinker the notion that you're just a hateful, evil person, Mr. Linder, for you even talking like that. Shame on
Jim,
you.
It's the same up here, too. I mean, I'm in northern Missouri, so right north of here is where you get all the hardcore north stuff, but here it's a mix of kind of north and south as a border state. But, yeah, that's the mentality. They don't think in these terms. You have to learn this stuff. It's not something you – until the rise of the Internet, I mean, I went to college, and I was always, you know, I knew that blacks were more criminal, and I knew that Jews were more leftist, but I didn't realize how deep all that stuff ran. And that's why it took me until my mid-20s and finding the ordeal of civility to really grasp, like, wow. But I saw writing editorials in college, and I was quickly attacked, even though I was just an average conservative individualist. I saw that, wow, there's I really learned, even though I'd been raised as a Christian, I never believed it, but I saw that there's this absolute hostility towards Christianity. And I had used it in one article I wrote. I said, AIDS is a queer disease in the same way that America is a Christian nation. And boy, did they go off on that phrase. They absolutely will not tolerate anybody calling America a Christian nation. They hate it. They hate Christians. And you have to learn to see what they are, and it's not something anyone, most people are not going to grow up in a family where they learn that, especially if they're in the middle of the country and they don't really know Jews. They're not going to know what the deal is, but anybody who gets into professional classes and is really interested is going to eventually come around and learn it, and it's a lot easier with the internet now, because one thing leads to another, and if you're truly interested in something, you can investigate it over the course of one night and really reach the conclusion that earlier would have taken a couple decades almost. Mm-hmm. Because you would have to only find a book here or there or find a Xerox newsletter here or there. So,
let me throw this possibility out to you and see how, because I'm kind of taken aback by your honesty about you don't know what's going to happen and how things are going to evolve. I thought maybe you had a distinct idea, but I think yours is that's honest, because I don't really think anybody knows what's going to happen. But
well, yeah, it's I don't know if it's honest. I mean, people, it's very easy to kid yourself. The worse is better, or you don't know. Who knows what's going to happen? All I know is Jews are going to continue to manipulate things to their own advantage, and obviously that's dragging us downhill. But how it's specifically going to evolve, I don't know. I can't know.
Well, what about, ultimately there's got to be a white political effort that's successful if we're going to turn things around, right?
Yes, so, by definition.
Yeah, no. So what I've been told that, we've at least got to get 1%. If we could get 1% started and locally in a political campaign and then build on that, because the masses will never – the masses are going to follow where the hardcore nucleus goes. So when I look around me locally, I don't see 1% that's willing to be racial. And I attribute that, and I didn't realize it at the time. I didn't even, honestly, didn't know what a bubble was when I was doing all this campaigning for Congress. But as I look back on my congressional campaigns, man, I tell you what, I would have never wasted the time given if I had known that we were in the midst of a financial bubble and people want for nothing. I mean, literally, I don't see any old vehicles on the road. Everybody's pulling a four-wheeler around going fishing or pulling a, $20,000 bass boat around going fishing.
Yeah. As long as the system is supplying the goods, you're not going to get anyone other than a tiny percentage who are going to really want to change it. But how is it now? It seems to be getting worse. I mean, Hitler didn't do anything until really they had the hyperinflation and the economic problems. That's when he really took off, because it wiped out the savings of the middle class. And if that happened, as it has happened recently, not to that level, but they've had a lot of paper loss of their 401k stocks. That's the kind of thing that gets people grumbling and questioning. If the stocks are doing well and whatever, yeah, they're going to be out in their basketball. They don't care about politics.
There's a funny satire of Hitler's real estate or something like that. Have you seen that?
I don't know.
Yeah, I saw it. I'm on the email list of Patrick's real estate, and they it's kind of funny. But we get back to the financial. I think the only way we're going to become racial again is for there to be a financial collapse. I think that's coming. I honestly do. Let me.
It would seem that way from the last few weeks, huh? Or at least headed in that direction.
Yeah, I don't think you can support. I think we're headed into a world recession, depression, and there's nothing they can do to stop it, because I think it depends on, in large part, that middle America can consume all this stuff and can go more into debt, and I don't think they can go into any more debt, and I don't think they can consume anything else, and I think their wages have dropped to such a point that, I don't think it's sustainable. But let me just hit on your forum here for a little bit, because I was a miserable failure at moderating my forums, and I've lost count of how many I had. I just finally decided to abandon it because I'm just no good at it. But Yours is unique on the internet. As I saw somebody comment, it's the best white nationalist board out there. And there's a lot, you know, nobody's perfect, and you can find fault with anybody on some things. But just tell us about your forum and your approach and what's happened over time and how you've tried to, you know, maintain free speech, but then ban people. Ultimately, you decide to ban folks.
I'm no expert in forum development or anything. What got my stuff going was, I had a professional background, so I had some credibility in writing whatever, and I did daily news when I got started. And at some point, we had a backer, and he wanted to set up a forum. We did. I didn't pay it over much attention until the last couple of years. And when I've really gone in there and tried to run it, so we had a basis with the number of people in there, but these things really attract a lot of people who are just there to make trouble or whatever. And essentially, if you let it run itself, it's going to be a whole lot of flames and useless people and whatever. And what I've tried to do is keep free speech, but people have to follow a few simple rules. And a lot of them don't want to, and a lot of them are antis or trolls or just troublemakers. And basically, you have to take a real hard hand with it. And beyond that, the value that a forum can have is kind of a, like what I have done is build archives of certain material so that anyone who's coming in new to our cause can see what we think of the day's events, but they can also go back and get kind of a good education. Like in the free speech martyrs section, I've got all the people around the world who are being persecuted and jailed for saying the kind of things we're saying on your radio show. And they can see at a glance, they can see, oh my God, there's 20 people in Canada who are in jail. There's, you know, Tobin over in Germany. There's Stoltz and Zundel. And they can see all this at a glance, and it's really pretty impressive. And this is stuff that, of course, is never talked about in the mainstream media. So that's one value that I think a forum can have. And they can go to the archaeology or the anthropology section, and they can read up on, oh, you know, the federal government is trying to hide the physical proof that whites were the first ones to come to the New World, you know, with Kennewick Man and all of that. And they can really get a kind of comprehensive education through a forum that they cannot get in any public school or college.
You know, I love Europe, and I've spent years living there, both in Germany and France, and I've traveled all over Europe. And but I'll be honest, I'm scared to go back.
Well, at this point, yeah. And that's a very rational fear. I would be afraid to go to England or Germany. Without a doubt, I wouldn't go there, because now these countries are trying to assert global control over the Internet. They're trying to say, if you say in country B what's illegal in our country, country A, if you know, we still assert that you fall in the foul of our law, and if we can get our hands on you, we will.
Right.
And the U.S. government has helped, like in the case of Zundel. They've turned him over to Canada, who then turned him over to Germany.
Right.
So this is what's going on. I mean, essentially, the elites, or the Jews, basically, are working as a global coordinated unit to shut down anybody who criticizes them or tells average people the truth about what's going on.
And that reminds me of why these folks were in prison. Tell us about, I mean, there's so many people clueless here in Mississippi and the South. You forget that. In the country. Tell us about revisionism. What is that?
Revisionism is the name given to the group of people who take a serious academic factual look at World War II, and specifically at the claims Jews have made about what happened to them during that war. And they're called Holocaust deniers by the Jews, but basically these people have demonstrated that just as the Jews have now admitted that the claims about being made into lampshades and soap are lies, so are the lies about the gas chamber. It's just stuff that the Jewish communists and their U.S. allies made up in order to make it seem like they're persecuted victims and we owe them restitution for the end of time and we must never oppose anything on their agenda. So the men who have done this careful, patient, scholarly research tend to end up fined or physically beaten or jailed. And, of course, the news of that is kept out of the mainstream TV news. So you won't hear about a Robert Forreson, for example, being beaten within an inch of his life for proving that a lot of what the Jews say about the so-called Holocaust is a lie.
What happened there now?
Oh, this was years and years ago, but he's a French guy who writes revisionist material or Holocaust-denying material, as the Jews would put it, and Jewish thugs attacked him, and there's a couple of photographs on the Internet. I think this happened back in the 80s, and, yeah, he totally messed him up and nearly killed him. And my point is, this is an example of a man doing honest work, attacked by Jewish thugs slash terrorists, and it's never talked about. The same way as Shannon Christian and Chris Newsom. It's just all this stuff is kept from the average person. If you know what's going on from TV, you have basically a flipped idea of reality.
Well, while this is going to be listened to a lot, let me tell, include this crime story, which had a big impact on me personally, because I'm the kind of person, once I become informed about, I was ignorant for a long time, but once I became racial, then I started looking at it, and I started looking up previous defendants in the Mississippi Supreme Court who were convicted of murder. And one of two defendants, I believe their name, one of them was Carr, and I can't recall the other guy's name, but they were black. They these facts I got from the Mississippi Supreme Court, they were waiting for a white family up in the Mississippi Delta who were at church on a Sunday afternoon, I think, or it might have been a Wednesday, but I think it was a Sunday. They came home. Mm-hmm. It was a man and a wife and two young kids, maybe. I know the girl was 9 years old, and the boy maybe is a little bit older. But they proceeded to, you can tell, the pathologist who's under a lot of attack now in Mississippi is named Stephen Hain, and that concerned me. But he testified that at the trial that the 9-year-old girl had been raped anally and vaginally. But that's not what she died of. The 9-year-old girl who was raped anally and vaginally was also shot, but that's not what she died of. The white 9-year-old girl who was raped vaginally and anally and who was shot died of smoke inhalation because the blacks burned the whites' house down. Huh?
Yeah.
Now when I hear that, huh?
Now, yeah.
That bothers me. I'm an honest.
Very, very, very similar to Shannon Christian. I mean, they did the same stuff. They shot him. They burned him. They poured chemicals on him. They raped him all different ways. Yeah. And why isn't this on the national news? Why isn't Nancy Grace, for example, talking about it?
But what I hear is Heavenly Father and Jesus. Mm-hmm. That's all I hear in Mississippi. And you know, the man I ran against for Congress. This is the first time I've mentioned this on the air. And this is the first time I've mentioned it in the interview, but anytime I think of Charlotte Parker, it bothers me a lot. So I'm going to mention this for the first time. I'd like to get your comment on it. Chip Pickering.
Okay.
Chip Pickering's a Baptist. His father, Judge Pickering, who they've cut down forests writing about what a great man he is and how they tried to get him on the Fifth Circuit down there. Of course, kissing black butt all the way. The Pickerings are big Baptists, as was Kermit McGregor, who baptized me when I was about 20 years old. Big Mississippi Baptist Convention. These are Baptists. Mm-hmm. All right, Chip Pickering, big Baptist boy. He's a missionary. Never had a private job in his life.
Mm-hmm.
I ran against him three times, 2002, 2004, 2006. And I had the signatures to be on the ballot in 2008, but I threw them in the trash. Because I literally became fearful that the police thugs who run the state would arrest me on some other trumped-up charge. But anyway, I ran against Chip Pickering, Charles Chip Pickering, three times. He won decisively because the people of the Mississippi's 3rd Congressional District thought Chip Pickering was a better man than me, thought he was a good Christian. Now come to find out, now this is on highly placed sources and multiple sources. Chip Pickering stated at the time when he announced he wasn't going to run for re-election, that he was resigning from Congress, that he wanted to spend more time with his family. And then very soon thereafter, it was announced that he was divorcing his wife. And then it came, but I had heard before the announcement that he was going to divorce his wife that he was having at least one affair, and if I got it right, it's multiple affairs with the telecommunication lobbyist up there in Washington. Now, that's the kind of people that live in Mississippi. They back Chip Pickering, And he's the guy that wanted to quit his job and take a $1 million lobbyist job after he had voted for a war. I mean, what do you do? How do you compete against somebody like that when you've got – what's your response?
Well, the problem is that it's just – the problem is the entire context in which you're trying to fight this is against you. And they can simply lie about you and demonize you and set you up on different charges. And really, it's like fighting the ocean or something. If our kind of people don't have the media to fight back on equal terms, there's almost nothing that can be done. You know, and they can cover up or downplay any kind of personal indiscretion on the part of their champion, and, you know, you only find out about it years later. I mean, it really is. It's like you're trying to fight a hurricane or something. If the other side controls TV, then they control what the average person thinks, and the average person biologically is built to follow authority. And only a small number of people have the ability to withstand constant propaganda from every angle, telling them that the racist is the bad guy and the nigger lover is the good guy.
You know, Alex, I'm looking at my Sam broadcaster. I don't know if you're familiar with Sam or not. Spatial audio?
A little bit, yeah.
You have heard of it? That's the.
I've heard of it. I haven't used it, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I use to do my internet streaming. And I have interviewed... believe it or not, I've interviewed Jesse Ventura. I even got an interview with General Hal Moore, you know, the general in the...
I saw your page. You had a number of impressive people listed on your archive page.
But the thing about Jesse Ventura and General Moore, I lost the interview because there's something in Sam where the pipe shuts down, and it's only did it on you know, what I considered key important interviews, which I consider this a key important interview. And I'm not sure if this what I'm saying is I'm afraid, given all that's been going on, that I may not get this recorded. But, you know, I've known you for a long time, so I would like to do more in the future and get this out there and maybe try to come up with a format where we could complement one another.
Yeah, sure. I'm willing to talk. I mean, the way I do it is right now I do radio, but I have someone record it myself more or less automatically. So I'm not really able to do two people, but we have done that with other stuff in the past using Skype or what have you. It's easier to record yourself and then put it up there, but when you get a second person, it can be a little more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think we use Shoutcast or else Skype.
Yeah, that's the Shoutcast is not the Windows approach; it's the other approach.
Shoutcast, Simplecast, one of those two.
Yeah,
but I know the Sam you're talking about. I haven't really used it though.
Yeah, I'm looking at the time click, but I don't see the data megabytes clicking. Which, you know, again, I'm thinking maybe it's not recording, but we should be streaming for those people who are listening live right now. Should be able to hear it. You know, I this is the most emotional. I try not to get emotional anymore, and I've had a fun time with my interviews, but I've been interviewing the enemy for the most part. I suck up to them, and they go along. So, but, you know, when I mention the Charlotte Parker thing, that really bothers me, and I start hearing about Shannon, Christian, those kids. It's a heck of a country we live in. Alex, I'm very grateful for your time, and like I told Dr. McDonald yesterday, I applaud your courage, and I'd like to talk with you again in the future.
Well, I'm happy to talk with you whenever you want, and hello to your listeners, and thank you for running for office. I'm sure that taught you a heck of a lot that you can pass on to other people, and you have a direct, up-close, personal understanding of how the system, including the other politicians and the media, are really used to clamp down on our race and anyone who tries to advocate for it.
Boy, there's a lot to know. There is a lot to know when you go to running that if I had just been a little bit more, if I'd been smarter, I wouldn't have made it easy for the enemy. I mean, I really made it easy for those guys. You at some point, you have to be clever. And I'm not a good politician, but I can tell you what will happen to you if you're not a good politician.
Well, they're going to come after you. It doesn't, and what's hard for the average person to understand is that this stuff is impersonal. They can dig up dirt on anybody. The system is not the way it appears to be from the outside if you're only paying casual attention. There are very strong forces at work to withhold and prevent any kind of white racial consciousness, let alone any overt political organization, from arising. And I can tell you that with 10 years of experience. They will use every dirty trick in the book to shut down your website, kick you off servers, deny you access to things that everybody else has. And none of this is ever written about, but it is very, very real.
I've been through all that. I've lost count of the number.
I'm sure you have.
I've lost count of the number of people that I've had internet service with, and it's just a nightmare. One last thing, and this may be for the only for the benefit of those listening, but so be it. Even though I'm sorry, I can't have this recorded. Call this a dress rehearsal. Both you and me, I think you'll agree, are persistent type people. So we'll work the kinks out and do a repeat, a multiple repeat of this interview, because it needs to be repeated over and over and over and over and over again. I mean, that's the way the Jewish media works, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, same basic ideas, but 1,000 manifestations and 1,000 repetitions. Yeah.
Yeah. So I hope you won't be too bothered by the fact that I didn't affect the recording, but we'll perfect it in the future.
Okay.
The thing I was going to ask you though about is Duke and the cancellation of the their conference there at that hotel. That was something, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the thing to observe there is that this is a perfect example of the double standard employed by the media and the FBI in particular. If whites had tried to do that to blacks, the FBI and the Department of Justice would have been there suing them for denying blacks their civil rights. But when it happens to whites, the FBI is nowhere to be found. This shows that the FBI is a tool used by the enemy against our race and anyone who tries to organize on its behalf. That's what your listeners need to understand, and I'm sure many of them do.
Yeah. I saw you write that in your forum, and I couldn't agree more. The FBI would have been all over that had the tables been turned, and that just
stopped. Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the thing: it's like Bill White and the Mad Hale thing. They went out and they set up Hale, and they're going to use whites contacting a juror, which maybe it's a dumb thing, but it's not illegal technically. It's not illegal to print their address. They go after stuff like that if we do it, but they use the same tactics themselves. So it's just hard to get across to the average person who has not been directly, personally involved in this, as you and I have, how utterly corrupt our federal government is and how strongly it is in the pay and the work of our racial enemies, the Jews. Mm-hmm. And they use it to empower these blacks to attack us. I remember years ago, Billy Roper was attacked on tape by an anti hitting him with a pipe upside the head, and it went to a court in D.C. and nothing happened. You know, the guy got away with nothing. And whereas if we run one classified ad that contains a word they don't like, they sue us for a couple of years. That's happened to VNN before. You know?
Yeah.
Because you're breaking their EEOC laws. It's just an extremely anti-white system, and the Jew is the root of it. And around the Jew are gathered all these elite white liberals who are celebrating Obama's win. And what you need to understand as an average white person is, man, this stuff is hostile to you. And you have to organize around race to ever get a chance of freeing our posterity from the grip of these monsters.
But down here, though, they got the preachers preaching love everybody. Love everybody.
Yeah. Well, what people in the South in particular, and it's the same here, need to understand is that these preachers are all bought out. And the way they're bought out is the elite ones are allowed on TV if they push for Israel, and they're flown over to Israel, and they're taken around, they're encouraged to identify, and if they were ever to stand up for the white race, they would have their 501c3 tax status yanked. And that's what they do. The federal government threatens these preachers, you know, if you try to preach pro-white or anything other than the government's line on race, we're going to screw you. And that's what's going on there.
I think the
churches are just instrumental in destroying our community at this point. There's nothing good to be said about them at all.
I think maybe it's part of the political solution is going to maybe necessarily need to be a pro-white church, pro-white religious organization that, I mean, some people just can't live and breathe without God. So there needs to be maybe a pro-white church out there to, that's political, if that's possible. And I think,
well, you know, William Pierce tried to set up his group that way as the Cosmotheist Church. And yes, you're right. People not only seem to prefer that, most people are religious, but it's the natural legal way to set it up is as a 501c3 deal. But they have overtly denied, there was a court case Pierce was involved in, they overtly denied him the ordinary legal status because his church was pro-white. So there's a complete, utter double standard there. You can do anything that's pro-Jew or pro-black, but if you try to do something pro-white, they won't allow you access to the same legal forms that everybody else has. Now, that doesn't mean you can't do it, but it is a roadblock to doing it. But I'd love to see a white charismatic come forward and just create his own church.
Yeah, that
now, that's not something I can do. I'm not a religious guy, but you know, if you had a good solid leader, you could build a church around it.
I wonder how long it would be before that white leader was arrested for something.
Well, it's difficult. I mean, look at the case of the seizure of the kids of the unregenerate LDS. That's what you're going to find. They don't like anybody who's breeding and teaching his kids to stay away from TV and teaching them the truth about race, and they will try to destroy you. So you have to more or less physically go off in the wilderness to the extent you can to escape Zog's clutches.
Mm-hmm. Alex, will you send me a pic of you and a brief bio of you, and so I can post it along with your interview of what I think I'm going to get is a shortened, abbreviated version at the front of the interview, and I'm fearful that I've lost the end, but I won't know until I try to, you know, see what's there. But can you email me your preferred pic and a bio?
Yeah, sure, I'll do that.
And like I say, let's talk again. It's just funny how the way things work out. After Obama was elected, I got the interview with Dr. McDonald, and to be honest with you, I've interviewed about enough of the enemy. I mean, I can they're boring,
all they can do is repeat things that aren't true, basically.
I'm going to be focusing on other interviewees, and you're a genuine leader out there. And again, I applaud your courage, and I look forward to more interviews in the future.
Thanks, Jim. I'll be happy to talk to you and your listeners anytime. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Jim Giles, and you're listening to Radio Free Mississippi.